Welcome to episode 16 of Mastering Defense Infrastructure. I'm Darian Macy, and as always, I'm joined by Jessica Bottlebrush. Jess, how's your week been?
Hey Darian, not too bad, thanks. I've been knee-deep in stakeholder meetings, but I'm actually excited for today's topic. Teaming up for tender success. This is where the real groundwork happens, right?
Absolutely. And you know, it's funny, people always think the real action starts when the tender drops. But honestly, if you're only forming your team at that point, you're already behind. I've seen it time and again. The best positioned teams are the ones who've built those alliances months, sometimes years, in advance.
Yeah, and it's not just about ticking a box. Early partnerships mean you're sharing intel, shaping the opportunity together, and you're not scrambling to fill gaps at the last minute. It's like you're building your own little ecosystem before the competition even knows what's coming.
Exactly. I remember preparing for the RAF Richmond redevelopment contract. This was, probably 4 or 5 years ago now. We started building alliances well before the RFT was even rumoured. We had our engineering partners, a security tech firm, and surveyor all lined up. Because we'd done the groundwork, when the tender finally landed, we weren't just ready. We were already a team. We even had a draft delivery plan. Meanwhile, our competitors were still cold calling potential partners. That early alliance gave us a massive edge, not just in the bid, but in how defense saw us as a credible, unified team.
That's such a good point, and it's not just about speed, is it? It's about trust. If you've already worked together or at least built rapport, you can present a much more convincing story to defense. They want to see a team that's actually a team, not just a bunch of logos thrown together at the last minute.
Yeah, and you get better market intelligence too. If you're close with your partners, you hear things, draft requirements, market whispers, all that. It's not about getting inside info, but about being plugged in. That's what we talked about in the last couple of episodes, right? Early engagement, shaping the opportunity, all of that is multiplied when you've got the right partners on board early.
So let's break down the types of commercial relationships you might see in defense. There's the classic prime and subcontractor model, joint ventures, and then those more flexible strategic partnerships or alliances. Each has its own place, depending on the project and the players involved.
Yeah, the prime sub model is probably the most common, especially for big infrastructure projects. One company takes the lead as the prime and then brings in subs for specialist work, like electrical, landscaping, or security systems. It's pretty straightforward, but the key is picking the right subs. And for subs, picking the right prime. You want someone who treats you as a real partner, not just a pair of hands.
And then you've got joint ventures, which are a bit more like a marriage, honestly. Two or more companies come together, sometimes even forming a new legal entity, to share the risks and rewards. I worked on a project up in regional Queensland, where two mid-tier contractors formed a JV to bid on a $300 million base upgrade. One brought the construction muscle, the other had the ICT and comms expertise. There's no way either could have gone for it alone, but together they ticked all the boxes. It was a lot of work to get the governance and decision-making sorted, but it paid off.
Yeah, JVs are powerful, but you've got to be sure you're aligned. It's not something you do lightly. And then there are strategic partnerships. Sometimes it's just an MOU, sometimes it's a long-term supplier relationship. Maybe you've got a niche tech provider who teams up with a bigger contractor and they agree to go after certain tenders together. It's more flexible, but you still need clarity. Who's doing what? Is there exclusivity? All that.
And sometimes defense itself will use an alliance contract, where multiple companies and the client all sign up to deliver the project collectively. That's less common, but it does happen, especially on really complex programs. The main thing is you've got to pick the model that fits the opportunity and the partners. Don't force a JV if a simple sub-arrangement will do, and don't settle for a handshake deal if you really need a formal partnership.
Yeah. And it all comes back to what you need for the bid. If your SER matrix, remember that from week 3, shows a gap. Maybe you need a partner to fill it. Or maybe you need a proven team as a win theme. And that means locking in the right alliance early.
All right, so let's talk about picking the right partners. Not every company that could team with you should. You've got to be choosy. Look at capability, defense experience, compliance, culture fit, all of it. I love using a partner evaluation matrix for this. It's not rocket science, but it forces you to be objective. Score each candidate on what matters most for the project.
Yeah, and don't forget the red flags. If a partner doesn't have federal safety or DISP certification, or they're shaky on compliance, that can kill your bid. I've seen it happen. A team looked great on paper, but one partner didn't have ISO accreditation. They got knocked out at the first gate. On the flip side, I remember a bid where our partner's DISP membership was the deciding factor. The client literally said, "We picked you because your team was the only one fully compliant from day one."
And culture fit is huge. If you're agile and your partner is a slow-moving multinational, you're going to clash. Or if you care about ethical business and they're, well, a bit too mercenary, that's a recipe for trouble. I always try to meet the team in person, tour their office if I can. You learn a lot from how people interact in their own environment.
Yeah, and don't be afraid to ask around. The defense industry is a small world. Word gets around if someone's unreliable or has a history of disputes. And check their financials if you're relying on them for a big chunk of the work. You don't want a partner going under halfway through the project.
One more thing, interest and commitment. If you're always chasing them for meetings or they're hedging their bets with your competitors, that's a red flag. You want someone who's genuinely keen to team up, not just adding you to a long list of maybe partners.
Exactly. And once you've shortlisted, do your due diligence. Meet the team, swap references, make sure their execs are on board. A partnership that's only championed by middle management can fall apart fast if priorities shift.
So once you know what you need, it's about filling those gaps, whether that's through exclusive partnerships or by bringing in key people. Sometimes the difference between winning and losing is having that one unique capability or credential locked in before anyone else.
Yeah, exclusivity can be a real game changer. If you've got the only supplier of a certain tech or the only team with a particular accreditation, you're denying that edge to your competitors. But you've got to use exclusivity carefully. Don't rush into it unless you're sure it's the right partner. And be clear about the scope. One tender, one client, or a specific technology area. Too broad and you might box yourself in.
And sometimes it's not about exclusivity, it's just about compliance. Like if the tender requires an Indigenous-owned business or a certified asbestos removal partner, you need to lock that in early. Don't leave it to the last minute and hope for the best.
And don't forget about people. Strategic recruitment can be just as powerful as a partnership. I've seen bids turn around completely because we brought in a project manager with deep defense experience. We actually did that on a robotics project, hired a PM who'd just finished a long stint at a defense prime. He helped us shape the plan, made introductions, and when we put his CV in the bid, the client saw a credible, known quantity. Our score on key personnel shot up and we won. Sometimes the partner you need is actually a person, not a company.
Yeah. An ex-defense staff can be a huge asset, not just for credibility, but for understanding the client's mindset. Just make sure you're following the rules. No using confidential info and respect any cooling off periods, but if you use their expertise the right way, it can really set you apart. All right, so you've picked your partners and filled your gaps. Now you've got to keep those relationships strong. It's not a set and forget thing. You've got to be proactive. Attend industry events, join associations, do the coffee catch-ups, all of it. I actually use a CRM to track partner engagement, just like I do with clients. It keeps me honest about following up and not letting things go cold.
Yeah, and don't underestimate the power of joint capability briefings or even co-authoring an article. It's not just about the work, it's about being seen as a team in the market. And referrals, if you can introduce your partner to your network and they do the same, you both win. But only do it when you trust them, because your reputation's on the line too.
And formal agreements. Get it in writing. Handshake deals are risky. Memories fade, priorities shift, and if things go south, you want clarity. I learned that the hard way on a project a few years back. We had a verbal agreement with a partner, but when the bid got tough, they started talking to our competitors. It got messy, and honestly, it was mostly because we didn't formalize things early. Communication broke down, and we lost trust. Now, I always push for an NDA and a teaming agreement as soon as things get serious.
Yeah, and don't forget about exit strategies. What if you don't win or if the partner underperforms? Build that into your agreements. And if you do lose, don't just drop your partner. Keep the relationship warm for next time. It's a small industry and today's competitor might be tomorrow's teammate.
And look, don't overpromise. If you say you'll give your partner a big work package, follow through. If things change, communicate early. Trust is everything. Most pitfalls come down to poor planning or poor communication. If you treat your partners as true allies, not just a means to an end, you'll go a lot further.
Couldn't agree more. All right, I think that's a good place to wrap up. Building the right partnerships before the tender drops is a force multiplier. It's what separates the reactive from the proactive. Jess, any final thoughts?
Just that it's never too early to start. That coffee chat or LinkedIn message you send today could be the partnership that wins you a flagship contract tomorrow. So get out there, be proactive, and treat your partners like the allies they are.
Well said. Thanks for joining us on Mastering Defense Infrastructure. Next week, we'll be talking about long-term strategic positioning, how to keep the momentum going beyond just one contract. Jess, always a pleasure.
Thanks, Darian. See you next time.
See you, everyone. Good luck out there.